This is What's at Risk on WBZ News Radio 1030 and WBZ.com with Mike Christian of Risk Strategies Company.
Hi, I'm Mike Christian, and this is What's at Risk. Tonight on What's at Risk, we're going to indulge ourselves just a bit and talk about music. We're obviously big music aficionados here at What's at Risk, and we've enjoyed integrating musical themes around our discussions on risk. Well, tonight, it's all about the music, and maybe just a little musical comedy. Our guest in segment one is Doug Broad, longtime editor of Spin Magazine and the editor of the recent book, Spin, Greatest Hits, 25 Years of Heretics, Heroes, and the New Rock and Roll. In segment two, we talk to author Mark Elliott about his new biography on musical legend and American icon, Paul Simon.
God make her road straight, God make her road true. St. Isabel is coming through.
From the foreword of Spin, Greatest Hits, by Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine. When Spin first appeared on newsstands in 1985, it was a revelation. While Lollapalooza's genre blending was still years away, Spin boldly put black artists and women on its covers when it was considered commercial suicide for a mainstream rock magazine to do so.
St. Isabel is coming through.
Spin was like a mischievous little flashlight illuminating the shadowy edges of the music world. It championed the fledgling art form of hip-hop while giving a national platform to experimental music, outlaw country, and hardcore punk.
Whatever it is.
And the international scene reports, look how they party in Glasgow. Who knew? Okay, I'll admit that each year when the magazine's top 40 albums list comes out, it's sometimes a little over my head. This year I had only heard of about half the artist's name, but I got turned on to St. Vincent, Drake, and Miles Benjamin Anthony Robinson, all of whom have been rocking me since. Next year, who knows? Looking forward to finding out.
Whatever it takes.
This book is a collection of unexpected discoveries, trials, and tribulations from the edges. Doug Broad is editor-in-chief of Spin Magazine. Formerly a senior editor at Entertainment Weekly, he has written for The Village Voice and The Hollywood Reporter.
Whatever it is.
He also contributed to Spin, 20 Years of Alternative Music.
We're with Doug Broad, editor-in-chief of Spin Magazine and editor of Spin's Greatest Hits. So Spin's been around for 25 years. What was the original premise for the magazine?
Well, it was started in 85 by Bob Cuccioni Jr., and it was kind of started as an alternative or an antidote to Rolling Stone, giving coverage to musicians who wouldn't normally get that kind of big mainstream coverage.
How long have you been involved with the magazine?
I've been here for 7 years. I've been the editor-in-chief for approximately 4.5.
And what's the traction been like for Spin? How's it has it ebbed and flowed with the music business? Or
like everything else, it adapts. The music business has changed so drastically, throughout those 25 years. I mean, for a while, Spin was very closely associated with the grunge movement in the early 90s, and that was one of the biggest points in the history of the magazine. Then when new metal became kind of big, the magazine sort of adapted to fit in a lot of that kind of music. And now we're back into just promoting and endorsing and writing about music that we love and going cross genre.
Now the first story in the book is by Chuck Klosterman, 6,557 Miles to Nowhere, and it's about revisiting the sites of famous and infamous rock and roll deaths, but not sort of in the traditional way, like Buddy Holly and you know, Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. It's a little more twisted version of that. What inspired you to pick that story for the book?
Well, you know, Chuck has been contributed to the magazine for many, many years, and he really honed his voice at Spin, and I thought that we needed to represent him in some fashion. And I thought this piece in particular was really interesting because he, you know, he traveled throughout the country going to places like the site of the Lynyrd Skynyrd plane crash, the site where Jeff Buckley drowned, where Kurt Cobain, you know, shot himself. And he just wrote this really interesting portrait of you know, what it means to become a rock and roll myth. And it just seemed like a really great story to print. Also, it became, it was sort of the skeleton of his later book, Killing Yourself to Live. It was sort of the outline for that book. So it just seemed like a really nice piece to run.
There's another story called War is Loud about the military's use of music as an instrument of torture. That's an interesting premise for a story. What songs are referenced in that?
Well, it's funny. David Peisner, who pitched this story to us, you know, he read something small about the idea that the U.S. military was using loud rock music and rap music to torture prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. So he just, you know, he reported the hell out of it and got some great stuff. It turned out that, I mean, a lot of the music that was being used was stuff like Rage Against the Machine, Metallica, Drowning Pool, Eminem. And the interesting thing is when a band like Rage Against the Machine, which is, you know, by all accounts, very, very left-wing, you know, and by their own admission, it just seems weird that prisoners would be tortured with this kind of music.
Yeah, exactly, considering Tom Morello's stance on that.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I know up in Boston, they play, I don't know if you're familiar at the Red Sox games, they play Sweet Caroline in the seventh inning, you know, Neil Diamond songs, which mm-hmm. would be torturous to me if I had to hear time and time again.
Well, one of the other ironies that David found in his piece was that the military would also use an audiobook that Janine Garofalo and Ben Stiller did about their friendship together, and they would use that pitched at a high volume to try to get prisoners to crack, and just the idea of using Janine Garofalo, it's just bizarre. I mean, it's sad, but it's really bizarre.
Any backlash from the government and the military on publishing that story?
You know, it's funny. We thought we'd hear a lot more, and we didn't. I mean, and Dave, you know, every piece in the book features a new introduction by the author, and in David's introduction, he talks about the response to the piece. You know, we thought we had a groundbreaking story that no one else really had, and, you know, we were very confident about that. And, you know, the piece came out, you know, it was pre, like, viral internet stories. So I have a feeling if it came out now, it would have gotten a lot more traction and a lot more hits, maybe. It just didn't have that kind of force when it first came out. But months later, David was contacted by various radio stations for interviews, and also by schools to give lectures. So, you know, after 6 months or so, the story began to sort of take on a life of its own.
Well, maybe with it being reintroduced in the book, you'll get to give it a little accelerator.
That would be great.
Slip inside the eye of your mind. Don't you know you might find a better place to play?
From an interview with Noel Gallagher of Oasis about his brother Liam. How has your relationship with Liam changed over the years? Has the bond really become stronger? Not really. The way it's changed is I've learned that instead of arguing stuff out with him and ending up in a fight, I work on his psychology. And he's completely freaked out by me now. He's actually frightened to death of me. So what can you say? Can you read him? I can read him. I can play him like a slightly disused arcade game. Give me an example. I can make him make decisions he thinks are his, but really, they're mine. Without fighting. It's an art I've learned. Our relationship's the same, but we're getting older. Instead of it all ending in insults and fist fighting, it's now more veiled psychological warfare through the press, which I excel at. Thank you very much.
But don't look back in anger. Don't look back in anger. I heard you say. Mm-hmm.
Miracle on Morrissey by Rob Sheffield, April 1994.
In the absence of your love.
10 years of mindless devotion to a compulsively iconic rock star with flabby pectorals and an Oscar Wilde fetish makes no sense, I know.
Accept my love.
But then, Morrissey makes no sense. He's rock and roll's untamed shrew, frivolous and coy, heterosexually unintelligible, our prodigal prince of frippery and froppery. Long before pop culture fixated on cyberspace and virtual reality, Morrissey took you through the looking glass with a shamelessly excessive vocal style, a fey parody of all the contradictions and illusions built into the human voice. These days, of course, there are Morrissey news groups in cyberspace on the internet. Just what his fans need. Another reason never to leave the apartment. He serves fiber optic cables coiled around cucumber sandwiches and hashish fudge.
Yes, you made yourself very plain.
From the rebirth of cool, introducing the Strokes by Mark Spitz. They were edgy and rattled about what was happening to them. The fantasy came true. Real fame after handing out flyers and playing empty bars. Their first big tour with the roadies and the techs and the caterer and the security because it's necessary. I was edgy and rattled because of what was happening to me. The fantasy came true for people who do what I do. I was embedded with a real deal band at the pop and fizz of their moment after years of writing about Sugar Ray and Third Eye Blind. We were all of us doing our best to look and keep very, very cool, despite the nerves. Strokes on the bus, me in the rental car behind the bus, the DC sniper at large as we drove through DC, Osama bin Laden too. The whole world changing. I read this piece now, and I can see how hard I was trying to get it right. It almost suffers from that sense of this is important, as if we all knew it wasn't meant to last and someone had to collect the info. And here are some comments by David Marchese about surviving Lou Reed. If you're like me, and the fact that you're reading this book suggests that at least on some level you are, then you're likely aware of Lou Reed's reputation as rock and roll's premier ornery interview.
I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. All right. Huh.
For more than 40 years, the guy has made a habit of leaving hapless journalists squirming on the end of pointed barbs. Though it makes for some absolutely killer reading slash rubbernecking, the Lou Reed interview experience is, I can assure you, decidedly less fun in person. At the end of the interview, I asked Lou this question. It's hard to find a story about you that doesn't mention your reputation as a difficult interview. Does that perception bother you? Well, you can judge for yourself, can't you? You want me to comment about other critics as though they matter? You save this question for last? I don't know why you brought it up, seeing as we were getting along fine. Unless I'm mistaken, what answer do you want? I wanted to know how you might feel about the way you were perceived. You're talking about critics and journalists. Listen, you're not talking about music. I don't want to get into this stupid subject with you. You brought it up. You shouldn't have. We had a good conversation, and now we're done. Feel better now? Did you find your angle? Do you think he did a good job? Haven't I been asking about music this whole time? You're not interested in music. We're done talking.
You're not the kind of person that I even want to be, 'cause you're so vicious. Baby, you're so vicious.
We're here with Doug Broad, editor of Spin Magazine.
What are some of your favorite bands down through the years, being the editor?
Some of my favorite bands. Well, it's funny. I was a big kind of new wave punk guy around the time Spin started, and I used to read the magazine. I read it from the very first issue. My personal taste kind of leaned toward, you know, Sex Pistols, Clash, also bands like The Smiths and The Cure. That's kind of a lot of British bands, I'll have to say. But also, you know, more, you know, a lot of American bands. I mean, I love the Arcade Fire right now. Bands like Kings of Leon. My tastes are kind of all over the place.
And I noticed in the book, though, you do go back to some of the older guys that I grew up with and liked, like for instance Lou Reed, who true to form was pretty cranky in the interview that you had in the book, but that was interesting that you visited with him.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to get a real taste of like what music has been like for 25 years. So we wanted to go back to some of the icons. We do have a Q&A with Lou Reed where he's as cranky as ever. There's also a piece by John Leland, which ran in the mid-80s. John's now at the New York Times, and he did a very kind of confrontational interview with Chuck D from Public Enemy. And Chuck was extremely outspoken at the time. He still is. But it's kind of refreshing to read a real gloves-off interview that's almost 25 years old.
Now, you included one of your articles in there, which happened to be an interview with Noel Gallagher of Oasis.
That was done for a 20th anniversary of Spin special issue. We were talking to various icons that have been associated with the magazine over the years, and it's funny. He was one of I've interviewed a lot of musicians and other celebrities in my life, and he was certainly one of the most articulate, funny, just really on the ball people I've ever interviewed. I mean, he's the perfect interview for a lot of journalists because you can just give him one question and he'll just go off and he'll come up with this really funny, very intelligent answer, and it saves you a lot of work.
I love a line that he had in there when he's talking about his brother Liam, which he's had these legendary battles with down through the years, but I play him like a slightly disused arcade game. Spectacular.
Yeah, he's just the king of the quip. He also is very self-critical. He talks about, I asked him about one particular song. It was Don't Look Back in Anger, but then he gets into some of his lyrics, and he himself doesn't know what they're about. I mean, a lot of critics complain about Oasis's lyrics not making any sense, and he basically admits it, that they're all nonsense, and it's just whatever word kind of pops into his head at the time.
What are the demographics of your readers now?
Well, it's actually changed quite a bit. Right now, our median age is 31, so it's a little older than you'd expect, and it's also, I think, 63% male. So it's a post-college male audience for the most part.
I guess it'll get older as the rest of our population ages, right?
Well, I think it also has to do with the fact that I think magazines, by their very nature, are more geared toward older people, since, you know, younger people spend a lot more time online, and I'm not sure they're so inclined to buy a magazine on the newsstand, so, or even get one delivered at home. So I think that's kind of why the demographics have shifted.
Well, that's an interesting point, because a lot of magazines and newspapers are looking at themselves or terming themselves media companies as opposed to a magazine or a newspaper. What are you doing in that vein?
Oh, we're certainly doing that as well. I mean, you know, we no longer call, you know, the company Spin Magazine. It's now Spin Media, and it's also just Spin as a brand. We've got a very robust website, spin.com, that shares a little of the content from the magazine, but really it's its own entity with daily reports and daily features. You know, every company has to adapt to this new kind of media world we live in, so we're certainly doing our part.
And speaking of adapting, what do you think about the future of the music business? It's changed dramatically over the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think you're definitely going to see less involvement from big companies, if big companies can even survive. There's going to be a lot more music out there. There already is. Just the quantity of music has grown so much just because it's so easy to record music now. But I think people are going to find that I wouldn't say gatekeepers, but tastemakers or curators like Spin are really essential to the culture, because there's only so much stuff you can listen to, and you kind of need someone to sort of help you along and try to find the good stuff.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And there's some good stuff in this book, Spin, Greatest Hits, 25 Years of Heretics, Heroes, and the New Rock and Roll. Doug, can our listeners find out more about the book at the website?
Yeah, go to spin.com, and you can just click on the book cover, and you can find a way to buy it. So by all means, do.
Do your kids want music, but you can't stand kids' music? Well, help is on the way with Kids Rock.
Kids Rock.
A collection of children's music performed by the bands you know and love, like Itsy Bitsy Spider by Coldplay.
Itsy Bitsy Spider went up the spout. Down came the rain and washed him out. Out came the sun, dried up the rain. The Itsy Bitsy Spider went up the spout.
That's right. It's the same old lame children's songs done in a brand new way. You'll hear Old MacDonald performed by Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam.
Old MacDonald had a bomb, old MacDonald had a bomb.
Great songs on one great CD. Can all this be for real? Well, all we can say is for shizzle dizzle, yo. This opportunity comes along only once in a lifetime. And remember, when we say Kids Rock,
Kids Rock,
we mean it. And who rocks harder than Metallica?
While the farmer had a dog, Bingo was his name, B-I-N-G-O.
Kids Rock is the real deal. Don't wait. Order today. Do yourself a favor and make Kids Rock part of your CD collection. Remember, it's not about your kids. It's about you.
The more it stays the same, the less it changes. And that's the majesty of rock, the mystery of roll, the darling of the song, the scoring of the goal. The farmer takes a wife, the barber takes a pole. We're in this.
Time for a CBS News update. We'll be right back with more What's at Risk.